according to my agenda, we're due for a break before we resume for the matter, item number, it's not six, I think I'd call it 5A. It's the new item, the Judicial Branch Administration Bar Association of San Francisco's request to amend rule that also has a speaker on that point. What I would do at this point is twofold. First, call for a break for 15 minutes, but reconvene then at 10:45 by this clock on the wall, and also indicate that when we reconvene, won't be present. I am recusing myself from item number 5A, and will return for item number 6.
And Chief, likewise, because the matter does raise legal issues that possibly could come before our court, I would recuse on the same basis.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Then at this point, then, I would turn the meeting over after break to Justice Miller. Thank you. Stand in recess.
Council meeting for our first discussion agenda item, the Bar Association of San Francisco's request to amend Rule 10.815. We have three individuals here to speak. The first is Stephanie Scaff from the Bar Association of San Francisco, and then Christopher Kearney from the Bar Association of San Francisco, and I think you're each going to divide that 10 minutes.
I'm actually going to take the whole thing. Chris has given me his time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you to the Judicial Council, to the members of the Judicial Council, for allowing us the opportunity to speak today, and in particular for your expedited consideration of our request of the fee proposal that's on the agenda today. I'm the current Secretary of the Bar Association of San Francisco, but I come before the Council today not just as a San Francisco soldier, but also as someone who cares deeply about the courts throughout our state. The core of our mission at the San Francisco Bar Association is access to justice. It is a mission I know we share with all of you. Our judicial branch is in trouble, and our courts are underfunded. The threat to access to justice is real. The proposal we have put before the Council today will not solve our funding problems, but it can be part of a short-term solution to keep our courtrooms open while we pursue the more difficult long-term efforts to restore funding to our judicial branch. Let me talk to you briefly about why we chose a specific proposal that we put before you. It was after careful consideration and discussion of many possible alternatives. There are several potential options that exist, but we targeted complex case appearance fees in our request for two reasons. First, and primarily, because our outreach in the complex courts, both on the plaintiff and defense side, has confirmed that there is strong support within our community for the imposition of this fee. Counsel and their clients involved in complex cases universally value the services provided by the Complex Case Management Conference, and they're willing to pay to continue to have access to those services. The second reason is a practical one. The service the fee supports, the provision of complex case management, requires significant court resources and is universally acknowledged to be a benefit to both the court and the litigants. We believe the reasonableness analysis that's set out in current California Rule of Court 10.815 likely would support imposing a fee significant enough to make a meaningful difference to struggling courts. Under the existing methodology, the reasonableness analysis includes consideration of both the direct and indirect costs of the product or service at issue and consideration of the benefit to the court and the public from providing the product or service. The proposal we offer today would help the complex department in San Francisco, and at the same time free up resources to help lessen the cutbacks that otherwise would occur in civil divisions generally. But to be clear, our proposal is not limited to San Francisco, nor is it limited to courts with dedicated complex departments. Should the Judicial Council approve our proposal, any court handling matters designated as complex could choose to assess a fee for appearances in accordance with the procedures already set out in CRC 10.815. The proposal will also indirectly benefit courts in financial distress that do not handle complex cases. By providing a mechanism for courts with robust complex litigation departments to generate additional fee revenue, the amendment we propose will reduce the demand by these larger courts for assistance from the AOC's emergency fund, thus freeing up a greater portion of the fund to assist smaller counties that do not regularly handle complex matters. In considering the request we make today, you as members of the Judicial Council have two questions to answer. The first is, can the Judicial Council approve the amendment we've requested? And the second, and perhaps more important, is should you approve that amendment? The first question is arguably the easiest of the two. Under the current statutory scheme, existing fees, such as first paper filing fees, can only be increased or changed by the legislature. But the authority to approve new fees, fees not currently authorized or prohibited by statute, is expressly left to the discretion of the Judicial Council under Section Government Code Section 70631. The Judicial Council has exercised its authority under this section to approve fees in a number of products and services not currently covered by statute. The approved products and services and the manner in which the fees for those products and services are to be determined by the trial courts are set forth in CRC 10.815. Although the list of currently approved products and services is fairly narrow, nothing in Section 70631 limits the types of products or services that are subject to approval by Judicial Council beyond the requirement that the particular product or service cannot be the subject of an existing statute or rule. There is no existing statute or rule that would prohibit the Judicial Council from amending CRC 10.815 to allow a fee for appearances in connection with complex case management conferences. The recommendation by the General Counsel against approval of our request rests on a concern that the proposed appearance fee is already authorized or prohibited by current Government Code Sections 70603A1, 70616, or 70617B3. The plain text of these provisions, however, shows that this concern is misplaced. Section 706A1 allows a supplementary fee set forth in Section 70616 to be added to first paper filing fees in complex cases. It does not authorize or prohibit fees for any other particular products or services in a complex case. Similarly, although Government Code Section 70617B3 prohibits fees for filing CMC statements, it does not authorize or prohibit fees for appearances in case management conference hearings. And I want to make the point that these are very distinct and a meaningful distinction between a CMC statement and a CMC hearing conducted in a complex case. The statement is usually a routine submission. It's for the benefit of the court. It's usually a couple of pages that is a status update. The complex case management conference, in contrast, and Judge Kramer, I believe, will talk further to this today, is something that really benefits the litigants. It's a real service. In fact, it is the key service provided by a complex case management designation. These conferences can substantially impact the progress of a case and are of substantial benefit to the litigants. In sum, although reasonable minds could differ, there is at least a very strong and well-reasoned argument that Section 70631 allows the Judicial Council to exercise its authority to approve the fee that we have placed before you today. So the real question for you, members of the Judicial Council, is should you approve this fee? We have real and true great sympathy for the difficult choices that you as a Judicial Council have been forced to make in the wake of the budgetary cuts to our judicial branch funding. The proposal we offer today would help the Judicial Council fulfill its obligation to ensure public access to the courts and adequate court funding. That is part of your mandate. Trial courts all over our states are in financial distress, and although the situation in San Francisco is dire and immediate, trial courts throughout the state are underfunded and suffering. The closure of civil courts will affect lawyers and judges and court staff, but the real suffering will be felt by the people who need our courts to provide justice. Difficult times like these call for creative and courageous solutions. Although the Council has exercised its authority under Section 70631 sparingly in the past, I urge the Council to conclude that now is the time for a more robust exercise of the granted authority. The time is now. It is highly unlikely that we will see any legislative solution in the near term. Without action by the Judicial Council, our courts will close, our communities will suffer, and our shared mission, access to justice for the people of our state, will be defeated. We recognize that the fee proposal that we put before you today will not solve all of the court funding crisis in the long term, nor even in the short term. But in the near term, it can be an important part of the solution, and we ask you today to approve the Bar Association request. I'm happy to answer questions for the members of the council, if that's appropriate.
Judge So?
I understand the San Francisco Bar Association is in support of this. What about the other lawyers that might be affected throughout the state?
So we have done outreach. In particular, we have here with us today the president of the Association of Business Trial Lawyers. We have lawyers that practice in firms that are have offices throughout the state, and we have done outreach beyond our area. There is not we have not requested or got official support from any other bar association, but we believe the support is strong within those who practice in the complex
department. But we don't right now know exactly what those other groups who might be affected by this fee, what their positions are yet.
So this fee was chosen because we did hear from many groups throughout the state that there was opposition more broadly to a fee that would be imposed across civil cases. And so that is how this was selected as part of that process. We don't have formal feedback from any other bar association about its support or otherwise.
Miriam Krinsky?
I just have one question about your can we argument. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm just looking at the last sentence in 7063A. Right. And I guess it's on the third page of your draft memo, right. The reply memo. And it's that sentence that says the only charges that may be added to the fees in this chapter are the following. And I recognize that this chapter is all civil fees. So I just am looking for how you get around that.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. If you read the sentence right before that, the important language is that the fees are the only allowable fees for those services and filings in the chapter. So it's really talking about the specific services and filings that the legislature has spoken to already. So, again, this is a kind of a canon of statutory interpretation. The legislature speaks to a certain area. And in this case, not only it's not even that they remain silent as to the remainder, they've actually expressly designated the judicial council authority judicial council for everything that is not expressly services and filings particularly set out in the statute.
Yes, Judge Rosenberg.
A quick question. Are you relying solely on the statute, or are you contending that the judicial branch through the judicial council can do this through inherent powers?
There is an inherent mandate to the judicial council to ensure access to justice and funding of the trial court, so I do think that there is an argument that there is an inherent power to make sure that significant cuts like those that are about to happen in San Francisco do not impair access to justice in a particular court or courts throughout the state. Having said that, our proposal is very firmly grounded within the existing statutory authority that's set out in 70631.
All right. Yes.
In terms of appearances, how many appearances is there a limitation on how this fee would be applied? So maybe there are three or four appearances.
Right. And in general, in complex cases, there are multiple appearances. It's one of the things that makes the case management conference a difficult and time-consuming and costly process mm-hmm. to administer. It is one of the things that would go into the analysis that the trial court would do of both the direct and indirect costs in coming up with the fee proposal.
All right. Any other questions? Yes.
Is there any other area in the courts where they are charging a fee other than the initial filing fee for additional services by the court?
So 10.815 lists 17 different places where there are fees that are charged right now.
Yeah, but I don't see any of those as being a
right.
settlement conference or some other hearing.
That's correct, and that is so. And I think that was my point when I said that in the past, the exercise of authority by the judicial council to approve fees has really been exercised very sparingly. Mm-hmm. And this, I am coming before you very honestly to say that this would be a historical departure from that more sparing exercise. It would be a more robust exercise of the authority, which I do believe, and we've carefully looked at, has been granted to the Judicial Council under the existing statute.
Yes.
Just Judge Jackson raises this problem of, you know, how many times. My concern would be a lack of uniformity within the complex courts. Some of the judges set regular case management conferences often, every few weeks, once a month. Some set them every 3 months. So you're going to have that kind of difficulty depending on where the case winds up, it would seem to me. It's also been raised to me that it would discourage the case management conferences and encourage instead demurs and the filing of ex parties. Do you have any concern about that?
I think first on the issue of consistency, I think that can be addressed by the Judicial Council in the way the fees are approved. So the trial court is the initial decision maker for determining the costs and the reasonableness of the fee, but that would be subject to Judicial Council approval. In the instance that the Judicial Council was interested in uniformity, I think there is something that the Judicial Council could do there. From a more 60,000-foot perspective, however, I think the risk to inconsistency in access to justice amongst the courts really outweighs the small risk of a small, really, what is one very specific fee that might be different from court to court.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. Is this on? Thank you. I'm very intrigued by this proposal. I have a couple of questions, though. Actually, more of a comment and then a question. I don't think the legislature quite would see the interpretation of the Judicial Council's authority the way that you've argued that it exists. And potentially, if the Judicial Council were to go forward with this, it could potentially somewhere down the road draw some legislation to clarify the law in a way that would not necessarily be supportive of what you're proposing. So I just want to caution people that that could be looked at with some skepticism by the legislature. However, I think the proposal is something that needs to be looked at, but I share the uniformity concern. That was the first thing that I looked at when I saw this proposal, is this uniformity that we have tried to maintain across the state would suddenly go away. So my question is, have you looked at doing this statewide as opposed to simply doing it in San Francisco?
I think the short answer to that is absolutely yes, and I'll just tell you, as the Bar Association, we've been pursuing every possible avenue we can to get a solution to this funding crisis, including presenting a similar, slightly different proposal, but very similar in intent to Senator Leno, and pushing for legislation to solve this problem. The reality is that the response to that we have gotten is that it will not happen. And so I'd love if you'd tell me that's not true. But
see why Senator Leno says it wouldn't happen. It may be the two-thirds vote requirement that he's concerned of?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it, and I don't want to misspeak. I think what we've heard is that it won't happen quickly. Right. And that the process that we could go through, that could go through the Judicial Council in this more narrow way, could happen in a way that could actually help the courts in the near term. The legislative solution, what we've been told, is that will take a much longer time.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments, and we appreciate you appearing here today. We have an additional speaker, Judge Richard Kramer from the San Francisco Superior Court. Judge Kramer.
Hi, I'm Richard Kramer. I am from the San Francisco Superior Court. I run the Complex Litigation Department, one of two now, and have done so for 8 years. I'm here to talk about the whether, not whether you can, but whether you should approve this fee. But in doing so, I will be also answering some of the questions about whether this is legally permissible. What I'm going to do is tell you how it really works. and what service would be provided and would be covered by this. And it has nothing to do with filing fees, and it has nothing to do with duplicating, say, a gate charge to come to court. It's important to understand the role of a complex litigation judge. And I mean both in a complex department as well as a judge in a county that doesn't have complex departments but is administering complex cases. And there is an absolutely crucial difference between that role. Basically, our court system works on the precept that the litigants run their cases and they from time to time come to court and ask us to make decisions on things. And our job is to take the choices presented and to resolve them. The metaphor I'm going to use, which I absolutely hate, but unfortunately it works here, so I'll do it. They come to court with a box. And in the box is their motion. In their box is their settlement proposal. In their box is their trial. Whatever it is, they put it in the box. We look in the box, and we say yes or no, up or down, blue or green, 7 or 12. That's what we do. We react to them. Matter of fact, we wait for them to show up. That's what normally happens in our court. Why? Because, one, there's usually no process by which there's a continuity where the judge knows what's going on a case on an ongoing basis, even so when there's single assignments, because usually the single assignment courts are far too busy. And second, courts are too busy. Law and motion courts can't say, hey, what'd you make this motion for? We got a better idea for running your case. It doesn't happen that way. So that's the job of the court system. We've created complex courts where we have a completely different role. Our job is to actively participate in the administration of the case and to think of ideas that may be beyond the considerations of the lawyers that will effectively, in an economic and a practical way, help resolve the case. Here comes the metaphor I hate. I apologize in advance. We have to think outside of the box. And we look in the box and we say, okay, you have this in mind, but here's some more ideas. Why don't you do this instead? Instead of making a motion, why don't you exchange information on the following terms, and then we'll see where we are. Or instead of moving for summary judgment on the whole case, why don't we have a bifurcated court trial where I can resolve a single question that will answer what you need to know to settle the case, to have the invisible hand show up. It's a service. And I am not suggesting that the judges that do this know a lot more than everybody else, but we do have the freedom of not being concerned about what our clients think of us. We do not have to add bluster to the other side to show we're tougher than you are, so we're going to make these motions. We also have probably more experience in some of these matters, and we also have the ability to know what appellate review on what we do is going to look like, so we can fashion the matters that we decide in a way that we think will assist the appellate courts. That's the service we perform. That service saves a ton of money. The first day people show up in my courtroom, the first case management conference, I tell them what to exchange, much like federal court, which mandates that. Discovery requests, no responses that read like a letter from James Joyce to Joseph Conrad where they're questioning each other's genetic stability and things like that. Just simply turn over these files. No motion practice. I probably save $30,000 on my average case or more by doing that, and they know it. And the idea that they would have to pay a minimal amount of money to save that, it's axiomatic. The best proof I can give you of that, look who made this request. Not me. Not the San Francisco Superior Court, the Bar Association of San Francisco. And by the way, I see the lawyers all the time from all over the country. And since this crisis has hit, on my anecdotal observations, everybody that appears in front of me says, what a great idea, especially if the alternative is to have the complex management system go away. I am absolutely certain of what I just told you. And just think about it yourself. Many of you, probably all of you, are lawyers and ran things. If you could pay X hundreds of dollars to avoid tens of thousands of dollars, then I think that would be a no-brainer. All right, I only have 5 minutes. I want to end with a personal note. My personal note is that the perception that what we're doing here is an adversarial proceeding is appalling. We are all in this together. We all have precisely the same job. What is that job? To provide access to the court system and the efficient administration of justice. We should be sitting around talking about how do we make this work and not simply looking at this as a question of statutory interpretation. Thank you. If anybody has any questions.
Any questions for Judge Kramer? Yes.
Basically what you're saying is that this is going to reduce the appearances by having this case management. Is that what you're saying?
Not just the appearances, but the costs. Mm-hmm. Basically, when do you get to go in and say, hey, Judge, what do you think? You sure don't show up in Law and Motion and say, I've got this motion, but before I argue it, got any better ideas, Judge? After you've spent $40,000 and written lots of briefs and things, you don't go in there and say, gee, what else could I have done? Here we do that. So, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Mary Roberts, Office of the General Counsel.
Good morning, council members, Bill, Ron. Before I start, I just want to make a couple corrections because we do have a listening audience who may not know just how the Judicial Council operates and what the distinction is between the Judicial Council and the Administrative Office of the Courts. So there was a reference to the AOC's Emergency Fund, and I just want to clarify that there is no AOC Emergency Fund. I think the reference was to the Trial Court Improvement Fund, which does by statute have a component that is or can be used to deal with trial court emergencies. That would be the Government Code Section 77209 that has been the subject of discussions at other meetings. And then secondly, there have been repeated statements about the Judicial Council's obligation to assure adequate funding for the courts. And I think it's very important that we all acknowledge that the responsibility for funding the courts rests primarily with the legislature, which appropriates the funding for the courts. And it is the responsibility of the Judicial Council to then allocate the funding to the courts. And with those two points, I would like to address the Bar Association of San Francisco's proposal and to say in the first instance that I am not addressing the merits of the proposal and whether would be a good idea to have this new kind of fee instituted in complex civil litigation courts across the state or in all courts. But the focus here is on the council's authority to amend the rule of court that allows the council to approve court-established fees for certain products and services that are not otherwise prohibited or permitted by statute. And it's important to understand that the council's rulemaking authority is not a creature of statute. It is a creature of the Constitution of California. In Article 6, Section 6 of the Constitution, the council is given rulemaking authority. The council has the authority to adopt rules of court administration, of court practice, and of court procedure. But the Constitution has an explicit limitation on the council's authority. The rules that the council adopts may not be inconsistent with statute. And that then causes us to turn to the statute that is at issue here. But frankly, we can't look at just one statute because 70631 is one of dozens of statutes that make up an entire chapter of Title 8 of the Government Code, Title 8 being the title that governs the court system in California. So that chapter 5.8, states the intent of the legislature to establish a uniform schedule of filing fees and other civil fees. That chapter is referred to in statute as the Uniform Civil Fees and Standard Fees Schedule Act of 2005. That intent of the legislature that there be statewide uniformity in civil fees, not just filing fees, but civil fees generally, is this overarching legislative intent that the council needs to be mindful of as it considers the proposal that is before you. The legislature has enacted this comprehensive set of statutes that address Superior Court fees. Section 70603 of that Uniform Act states that, except as provided in that section, the fees charged for filings and services under the chapter are intended to be uniform statewide and the only allowable fees for those services and filings. Let me say that the representatives from the Bar Association of San Francisco, in noting that there is no specific statute that addresses case management conferences in complex civil litigation matters, that's absolutely correct. There is no specific statute on that specific point. But if you look at the statutes that are part of the Uniform Fee Act, you'll see that there is a specific statute that addresses complex civil lit, and it imposes an additional fee on the litigants in complex cases. That additional fee is, at this point, I think it's $550 per party with a cap of $10,000. That's a filing fee. The statute also, the statutory scheme, Chapter 5.8, also has another statute, 70617, that prohibits charging filing fees for a very long list of items, one of which is a civil case management statement. And so while we acknowledge in our mini-brief, if you will, that we wrote for our director of the Office of Governmental Affairs, that there is a difference between a case management statement and a case management conference, when we take a step back and look at the overarching statutory scheme and the express legislative intent, our conclusion is that the vehicle that is identified here, the Rule 10.815, which is the implementing rule for the statute, 70631, is simply not an available or appropriate vehicle for the Judicial Council to take the action that is requested. Can such a fee be established? Absolutely yes. What body has the authority to establish that fee? The body is the legislature. Because of our analysis and conclusion, our recommendation to the council is that it not approve the request of the Bar Association of San Francisco with regard to the amendment of Rule 10.815, because of our conclusion that for the council to amend the rule as proposed would be inconsistent with statute. If you look at the rule, as already been said, the rule identifies 17 specific products, mostly products and services, that are ancillary to the court's actual proceedings. We think it would be, as noted, an historic departure for the council to amend the rule to add on the proceeding fee, the appearance fee, as proposed. But, you know, for the council to do something that is an historic departure is not a no-no, but what is inappropriate would be for the council to amend the rule in a manner that would result in an inconsistency with statute. Because of that, as I said, our recommendation is that you not accept the request, but also that you direct staff to consider what new statewide fee increases might be appropriate for the council in its constitutional authority to recommend to the legislature for consideration. And we also recommend that you direct the AOC to continue working with the trial courts to find other ways that are constitutionally sound for addressing the reduction in state funding that is affecting all of the courts and judicial branch entities. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
I have one,
all right. Thank you. We'll start with Justice Hull.
Ms. Roberts, thank you for that. The language that we're dealing with that seems to be most central to this issue is in 70603, subsection A1, relating to saying identifies that only charges that may be added to the fees in this chapter, and then since the chapter refers to all civil fees and not just first filing fees, you base a large part of your conclusion on that language, and I understand that. As I heard Ms. Scaff's submission, if you will, she suggested that the language, some language that immediately preceded that particular language, somehow placed it in a different context. Could you speak to that?
I would speak to it, Your Honor, in this way, which is that it is in looking at the statutes and what they mean and trying to divine legislative intent, it is important to look at the context in which the statute appears. And here, while I think the parsing of the words, I would agree with Ms. Scaff in terms of the parsing of that sentence, but if you take a step back and look at where that section lies, and it's part of, as I said, the Uniform Fees and Schedule Act, I think the more reasonable conclusion about what the legislative intent is that fees in complex cases as the one proposed were just not supposed to be established in any way other than by the legislature.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Penrod.
If this fee was applied across the state to all courts that have complex litigation departments, would that satisfy your statewide uniformity problem?
The vehicle that the Bar Association of San Francisco is proposing to use is one that is court-specific. So by its very nature, it would not be a uniform statewide fee. But even if it were a uniform statewide fee, it's not something that the council, in our view, is authorized to establish or to permit the local courts to establish.
Okay, but I'm only focusing on the uniformity argument. If it applied to all complex courts throughout the state, that would be a uniform fee, wouldn't it?
Well, if a uniform fee were applied statewide, it would be a uniform fee, but the proposal is not for that. It is for allowing each individual court to determine what the appropriate fee would be, and that's part of the problem with the statute that would arguably authorize that. The statute requires that the fee that is charged be a cost recovery fee and nothing more. And because each court that has complex civil litigation departments or that handles such cases would presumably have different costs involved based on any number of factors, I don't think you could have a uniform fee using 10.815 as the vehicle, which is what the proposal is.
Wouldn't that argument apply to any fee, though, that all courts mm-hmm. have different costs and needs? But we apply fees all over the state all the time, and they have to do it.
But those fees, I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstand your question, but the fees that are applied are uniform, irrespective of the fact that it may cost the court more or less for providing whatever service. But that's why the legislature has enacted a uniform fee system, so that there would not be the kind of court-to-court or even department-to-department disparity up and down the state. And that is something that is worth noting, that when the legislature enacted the Uniform Civil Fees and Standards Fee Schedule Act of 2005, it explained the purpose of what it was doing. In uncodified language, the legislature explained that local fees and surcharges on court filing fees have created confusion, difficulty in administration, and lack of uniformity in fees in different counties across the state. The creation of a uniform civil fee structure will streamline and simplify civil fees, provide for uniformity in different counties, and address the funding shortfall occurring throughout the state. But let me just say, the reason 10.815 is not a good vehicle for trying to establish this kind of fee and then do it on a statewide basis is sort of illustrated by the kinds of products and services for which the council has authorized trial courts to establish their own fees.
Don't you think that the talented staff we have at the AOC can come up with a uniform fee that would work in all the different complex departments if you expanded it to make that their charge?
You mean in an effort to shoehorn it into 10.815?
To make it uniform satisfactorily for all complex litigation?
I think if the task assigned to the talented AOC staff were to try to come up with a uniform fee that would make sense for this kind of activity, an appearance in a case management conference, I'm sure that could be done. But the vehicle that is being utilized in connection with this proposal is not the right vehicle, because it requires that each court determine what its actual costs are. So the rule would have to be rather dramatically amended, as would the statute that the rule is implementing.
I'm sure they would be willing to amend their request to meet that status. I have two more questions, and that's it. One, are you saying that the Bar Association's argument is not even arguable, that they're just flat out wrong? Or if it's arguable, do you think this body in these times should be creative and be willing to take a risk or two?
You know, in the absence of law interpreting 70631, I would be I'm disinclined to say absolutely, positively, the Bar Association of San Francisco's argument has no merit. I think that would be going too far. However, I think that when you look at, again, the statutory scheme, when you look at the constitutional authority of the council and limitations on the council's authority, I think that if this matter were put to a reviewing court, I think it's far more likely than not that a reviewing court would conclude that the council lacks the authority to do what the Bar Association is asking it to do. Again, the legislature has that authority, and I'm convinced that working together with the bar associations up and down the state, with the trial courts, and other interested constituencies, a reasonable fee for this kind of activity and many others could no doubt be arrived at.
Ms. Grinsky?
Yeah. I actually was hoping, since Kurt is in the room, if I could just ask some questions prompted by Mary's comments to Kurt. So, Kurt, let's assume, and I don't know, you know, where the discussion is going to come out, but let's assume for a moment that we're moved by the arguments that the Bar Association has made, that Judge Kramer has made, about the notion, the principle, that complex cases, by virtue of the uniqueness of them, by virtue of the money that the parties save, that there is a justification for the fee, and perhaps even a justification for a pilot project, letting San Francisco move forward with a fee. But let's assume we're also troubled by the analysis Mary's presented and OGC has put together. We're troubled by our authority to enact that fee. So we really have concerns about whether we can do it, and we have concerns, as validated by Senator Evans, with the legislature's view as to whether we can or should be doing this on our own. What's the quickest? So I have two questions for you, if that's kind of where we are. And again, I don't know where we are, but I'm just trying to create a hypothetical. One, what's the quickest, if we did pass a motion today asking you all to try to move on a legislative effort, what's the quickest that a fee such as this, through emergency legislation or otherwise, could actually come to pass? And two, is it your understanding that it would require a two-thirds vote?
I don't have an answer to the last part on whether it would require a two-thirds vote. I think Mary is taking a look at that question. So, open question, and I think that depends in part how you would actually try and formulate that fee as a two-thirds. But it does impact, I think, the ultimate chances of success on getting a fee if it's a majority vote or a two-thirds vote.
And actually, just to add to that, if we formulated it more as a pilot project, would that make it less likely that it would require a two-thirds vote? Or a fee is a fee, however cast? Okay.
That would be my understanding.
Okay.
In response to your question on the timeliness of this, and I've spent a fair amount of time over the last 2 weeks both looking at the proposal from the Bar Association of San Francisco and trying to get a read on whether the legislature would share a view on whether the council did have that authority or not, but also on trying to work with the legislature on coming up with some solutions, and particularly a fee solution, and if a solution such as a fee on complex litigation would be viable, to get a sense of that. It would be my read, Ms. Krinsky, that there is probably little or no chance to get the kind of agreement that you would need before September 9th, when the legislature leaves, on this issue. Essentially, you're trying to get a lot of stakeholders together. You're trying to get houses together, and I think there's not, in the time I've spent now with legislative staff and members on both sides, that there's not necessarily agreement at all that this could be done. The other part that complicates it, of course, is you would be asking the legislature to try and do this quickly without the benefit of vetting this through policy committees, even through budget committees. And I think despite, I think, some of the issues raised about whether there is opposition or not, you know, there's not a bill out there, so folks are not coming forward and saying, you know, we're opposed to a concept. It's difficult to state an opposition or a support if you don't know what you're opposing or supporting at this point. But I'd suggest that there would be an extremely difficult time, and I would suggest probably little chance, 1 or 2%, that you could actually get legislation before the 9th. That doesn't mean then, and I've heard this from a lot of members and a lot of staff, that couldn't be considered come January. One other comment that I think I've heard a number of times from legislative staff is we got a difficult year coming up starting in January when the governor's budget. We're going to be looking for solutions, and that doing a small piece now is a small piece now, that we're going to have to be looking at all solutions, and as we've talked about yesterday, solutions that may involve general fund, that may involve reserves, and that may involve new revenue as well. And so I think there is a sense that folks would like to put this in the perspective of the broader problem that's facing the judicial branch in funding right now. And I should say that I heard from a number of folks, Senator Evans' concern is that there is not a belief that the council does have the authority to create what would be potentially tens of millions of dollars of fees disparately through the courts, and there would be a risk of backlash of the legislature then if the council were to take that action, that the legislature would want to clarify. And I would suggest that the clarification would be more limiting, or at least there would be the risk of that if the council were to take that action.
All right. Judge Baker?
Well, I think that we have an impressive report from our general counsel, and I appreciate the comments by Senator Evans about the negative effect of the potential negative effect of our actions with the legislature. I'd like to move that we accept the staff recommendation not to amend Rule 10.815. Items 2 and 3 of the staff recommendation seem a little bit to me, Howard, to be a little bit surplusage, because we have such an aggressive legislative agenda right now that includes seeking alternative sources of revenue. So I'm curious if staff, Mr. Child, you'd probably be the one to respond to that, whether really approving a motion including items 2 and 3 in the staff recommendation would really be necessary.
It, It has historically certainly been the position of PCLC, as we've been working on budget issues, to look at all possibilities, and that includes new revenue. And I fully anticipate that, indeed, we will be focusing on new revenue as part of our budget solutions as we're moving through the next budget year.
Okay, I'll second the motion.
So, all right, any further discussion?
Yes, the motion would be just to approve item number one, then not amending Rule 10.815.
All right, and we have a second from
Yeah, I second it. Fine. Discussion? Right.
Any discussion?
Yes.
Ron Overholt?
Sorry to delay. I just wanted the context to be that the discussion about whether to actively find solutions to the problem in San Francisco is not an adversarial issue. That is something we're all on the same page on, in my view. And so this specific question about trying to get to the appropriate vehicle to do that is adversarial, I guess, in terms of having different views of what is a proper vehicle to do it. But I don't want any misunderstanding that there's some effort not to help San Francisco or any other of our courts that are in fiscal trouble. That's actively underway, and so I just want that as a context as this decision is made, however it's made. That we're continuing to try to do what we can to keep our courts open.
All right, Judge Jackson, did you have a comment?
Well, I was a little concerned when you were saying you are only going to be addressing item number one, but as to two and three, I think it is important because, frankly, I'm very impressed and I applaud because it's not about the courts, it's all the stakeholders. And I really appreciate that the bar, and not just San Francisco, but throughout the state, and what I'm hearing from Judge Kramer, the country, they're concerned about this.
So do you have an amendment you want to propose?
I would amend that we also consider items 2 and 3. I'm an advisory. Can I do that?
Yes, you can.
Oh, good. Okay. That's mine.
But I want to find first. Are you willing to add that to your motion?
I have no objection if that's the will.
All right. And Judge Pines?
No objection.
All right. Okay. So we added that. And Judge Pines, you had a comment?
Okay. Yes. Well, I want to, again, echo what Ron Overholt said and deal with the context. The reason we're considering this, the reason we've added it to our agenda at the last moment is because we're all concerned about what's going on in San Francisco. And we appreciate the efforts of the bar to try to find solutions here. At the last meeting, I expressed my personal concern about the civil courts in San Francisco closing, and we do not want that to happen. There is a solution, and we're waiting to hear back Judge McBride and Judge Kramer and Judge Jackson. We're waiting to hear back from your court on whether we're going to have a solution. There have been some meaningful discussions where, as I understand it, a compromise is being made and a one-year solution is being offered to your court. You've asked for a three-year solution. None of us have three-year solutions here. We're all facing real problems in 2012, 2013, and so on. But there is a one-year solution on the table now that will keep these courts open. So what's going on? Are we going to have resolution of this now? And it's a solution, as I understand it, that involves some use of these emergency funds, some use of the reserve funds from San Francisco, and other solutions here.
But I just want to say I appreciate those comments, but I'm not sure I want to put them in that position to have to negotiate for the courts here. But
this is rhetorical, but okay. I want them all to appreciate that, and I want the public in San Francisco to know that this is a matter that's being addressed by the council. There have been some discussions to try to work things out, and the ball's in San Francisco's court right now, as I understand it, to resolve this. And we've got a workable arrangement here that can keep the courts open.
All right. We're still in the discussion phase, Judge Kaufman.
I think all of this motion is saying is that we don't believe the Judicial Council has the authority to vote this. We are expressing no view by this motion as to whether it's appropriate or not. I think most of us would be inclined to support something like this in the legislature. Okay. All we're saying is we don't think we have the authority based on the OGC opinion. That's all we're saying. And we certainly, as Ron Overholt has said and everybody else says, we are looking for solutions. We want to work together. This is not an adversarial position. This is just a legal position that we're taking today. And if there's somebody can figure out a way to to get this through the legislature in a very fast manner.
I was going to suggest a headlock or something.
and I know maybe we can talk about a sunset legislature, something to get it through that at least solves a temporary problem until we can a major solution. Let's not misinterpret what this is. All it is saying we don't think we have the legal authority. Nothing more, nothing less.
All right, Ms. Krinsky.
I just want to echo what Judge Jackson said, which is I really want to thank BASF and the individuals who worked on this for coming forward. And, you know, I agree with the sentiments. We are all in this together. It's not an adversarial circumstance. But I think we're all trying desperately, you know, as Jim said, to look for creative solutions and find our way there. And if we could do this, I think I've heard enough sentiment that we would do it, but I have some real concerns with our legal authority to do it, and I think they've been reinforced by the senator's comments, by what Kurt's heard about not simply the legal peril with our moving forward, but the political peril in terms of the views of those in the legislature who have been talked to about our authority to do it. So I think if we did move forward, it would be a very short-term movement because the legislature likely would slap us back, and what we got in response could be worse than where we sit currently. So I do think that there is a view that this makes sense. I did want to add two things. One is it's my assumption that the second part of the recommendation, item two, is directing the AOC to continue to consider new fees. I don't think it's something new and different. We've been doing that already. Kurt's been trying desperately to try to do that. So I don't think one should read that as suggesting that the green light is now on doing it. It's a continued green light that's been in operation throughout. And frankly, I don't think it's the AOC alone or Kurt alone or OGA alone that are doing this. I think it's to continue to work with the bar and the legislature and others to find a solution here. The second clarification that I think is important is by virtue of having raised this issue, it gave us the opportunity as a council to also look at the procedures for authorizing emergency funding requests. And we had the opportunity to look at a memo that issued a few years back in regard to that. I think based on our having looked at it, it's my understanding that it's our intent to have our staff try to clarify the criteria that were adopted years back that probably are no longer applicable, and that we've asked our staff to revisit what's set forth in those criteria and to also look for a process where the council is the one who will be exercising the decision-making in regard to those emergency funds. So I know that there have been inquiries from individuals in the legislature and otherwise about that issue, and I think by virtue of the discussion this council has had that it's important for it to be clear that that is something that we very much intend to do and have asked our staff to do and will come back to at our next meeting.
All right. Thank you. Judge Herman?
Yeah, I want to echo some of the comments of my colleagues, Judge Pines, Judge Kaufman, Ms. Krinsky. And that is that somehow there's this gulf or disconnect between this body and the trial courts. And I look around this room, and I see former bar leaders at the state level and the local level who are now on this body. Some of us now judges, becoming bench junkies instead of bar junkies, and willing to contribute to the future of this branch. Everyone in this room is either a lawyer or on the bench as a recovering lawyer, I like to say, or as a practicing lawyer in the trial courts, consumers of what we do in the trial courts every day with staffers who are all dedicated to the idea that we are struggling to find the best solutions that we can for our trial courts. So,
Ms. Mathai?
To make a slight clarification on what Ms. Krinsky said, and which is only that while we have asked, or we are, I don't know if we've officially asked yet, but the intent certainly is to ask staff to relook at those criteria and make recommendations to the Judicial Council with regard to what criteria should be used. That was my only clarification. And while I have the mic, I'll only say quickly that I am very concerned about, even if there is a potential that, which I consider to be a very, very small potential, that we would have the authority to do that. I think it would be a mistake for this body to exercise authority where it is not clear that we can, particularly under these circumstances. And so I would support the motion that's on the table.
Judge Rosenberg?
Just a thought on behalf of the trial courts. There are 58 of them, and I think we have to soberly realize that while we may very well reach a solution for San Francisco, and I do not disagree that a solution needs to be negotiated and reached that will help San Francisco, the situation that San Francisco finds itself in today may very well be the situation that 15 or 20 other trial courts will find themselves in next year, and certainly that 56 of 58 trial courts will find themselves in 2 years from now. And so there's only so many bailouts and unique approaches that we can employ. So I hope everyone keeps that in mind.
All right, then. I would like to call for a vote on the motion. Does it need to be repeated? It's been a little while, but I think that we're...
in favor of the recommendation by OGC.
Judge Baker, could you just repeat it, please?
Yes. The motion is that the council approve the staff recommendation, one that... we not amend Rule 10.815. Secondly, that we direct the AOC to consider new statewide fees or fee increases that the council may recommend to the legislature to help offset the reduction in state funding for trial court operations. And thirdly, that the Judicial Council direct the AOC to continue working with the trial courts to find other ways of addressing the reduction in state funding for trial court operations.
All right, and there was a second by Judge Pines. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Abstain.
All right, so we have an abstention and we have one no. All right, then the motion passed. At this time, we have asked the Chief Justice and Justice Baxter to return. So